It is 7:30, time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Randy Rowland and Tom Bernard. Randy Rowland and Tom Bernard are both veterans of the Vietnam War and being featured in a documentary just out, actually last night, titled Sir, No Sir, which focuses on how the GI resistance was actually what ended the Vietnam War. Randy and Tom, thank you very much for coming in this morning.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
If you would start out, actually, and give us a brief bio of yourselves. Actually, Tom, how about you starting?
Let's see. You know, I'm 57 years old. I'm married. I've got five kids, the youngest now being 25 years old. And I'm originally from Detroit. Since Vietnam, I've ended up working for the labor movement for the last 30 years. And I spent 20 years working for the Teamsters Union. I spent some number of years here in Seattle from 1992 through 1999. I wanted to say hi to all my Teamster brothers and sisters out there if you're listening. I used to work for Teamsters Local 174, just right down the street from your studio here. And I've also spent some time working in the veterans movement itself since I've come back from Southeast Asia.
All right. And Randy?
Hi. Well, I'm a nurse over at Harborview. Back in the day, I was a medic in the Army, and it was taking care of the wounded that ever turned me around. You know, I started off my life, I was raised in a military family, and I was in a conservative environment and had no reason whatsoever to believe that the Vietnam War was wrong, and I enlisted in the Army, and it was when I was taking care of the wounded down at Madigan that I had my conversion, so to speak, where I came over to the side of the anti-war movement because the situation for those that I was taking care of was so horrible that I really felt like there better be a damn good reason for their suffering. And so I started thinking about the war and reading what I could read about it, and went from apolitical to very political in sort of a 0 to 60 in 1 second kind of a jump, when it dawned on me that the war really was wrong, the Vietnam War really was wrong. And so I became a GI anti-war activist. Ultimately, I was convicted of mutiny for singing We Shall Overcome and went to prison. After that, I got out and, here I am, nurse still. And, my life's been fine, even though I got a dishonorable discharge.
Tom, how did your conversion come about?
Well, I was raised around Detroit, Michigan, and I always describe it as a good working class family, big family in Detroit. And I was in and out of college after high school. I couldn't quite stay in school. Spent more time outside the classroom than in the classroom. And of course, at that time, which was the 1968, the draft was on. And I had already had friends of mine who were that I went to high school with that had been either wounded or killed in Vietnam. And coming from my family, my dad and my dad's brothers were all vets of World War II, and my grandfather was a vet of World War I. And I was pretty apolitical, but since the draft was on, I was out of school. I didn't have a deferment. I ended up enlisting in the Air Force before the draft actually got me. And I knew one thing is that I didn't really want to push a gun through rice paddies in Vietnam. I was aware enough to understand that. And I thought that maybe by joining the Air Force, I'd end up in Europe or Greenland guarding B-52s or something. But being a good Catholic kid, I had taken 4 years of Latin in high school. And when I went into the military, they put us through a battery of tests, one of which was language aptitude tests. And I scored high enough on the language aptitude test where the military approached me and said, we want to send you to language training, and what languages would you like to study? And, of course, they gave me this long list. I said, Russian at Syracuse University. That was one of my choices. Well, everybody at the time was being sent to Vietnamese language school. And so I was selected to go to Vietnamese language school, and I went to Fort Bliss in El Paso, Texas, to the Defense Language Institute Support Command, and studied the Hanoi dialect of the Vietnamese language there in 1969 through 1970. And actually, in the field that I was in, they kept us 2 years in training before they sent us overseas. And so I spent 2 years in training and language training, and then got sent overseas. And I was attached to a unit. At that time, they called it the U.S. Air Force Security Service. And we were under the administrative control of the U.S. Air Force, but under the operational control of the National Security Agency. And so all of the missions that we went out on were intelligence collection missions. We were Vietnamese interpreters, and we were performing operations for a civilian agency, the National Security Agency. And it was really during the course of those operations that myself and really a lot of the GIs that I was stationed with went through a tremendous political education about the war, about the U.S. intelligence community, about U.S. government policy, and really changed all of us fundamentally, I think, as human beings, and certainly turned a lot of us from being apolitical into very political. And really, by 1971, our unit was virtually embedded by anti-war sentiment. And so that's just a kind of a brief history of how I got to Southeast Asia and part of what I did there.
So you were both at last night's opening of Sir No Sir, which, again, is a documentary about the GI resistance, which my understanding is essentially what ended the war. Would that be fair?
That's very fair. When Nixon withdrew ground troops from Vietnam, as the Pentagon later admitted, they did it because the Army had become unreliable. And I take a considerable pride in that. For helping in a small way, anyway, to make that the case. You know, I mean, all credit, of course, goes to the Vietnamese for fighting on under incredible odds, I mean, against incredible odds. But the American public turned against the war, and American soldiers definitely turned against the war. And that had a huge impact on the American ability to fight the war.
I was going to add to that. I think I think a fair description is that the anti-war movement itself, that the GI movement played an incredibly important role in the anti-war movement, and the GI movement played an incredibly important role in bringing an end to U.S. involvement in the war. It's a story that clearly hasn't been told and has not been recorded in history. In fact, it's been, I think, intentionally erased and intentionally suppressed. And that's one of the interesting things about the movie is that this is a movie about what happened in Vietnam 35 or 40 years ago. And I know that when we talk to audiences that come to see the movie, it's a moment of, aha, this really happened. People, it clicks in their brain that, yes, that thousands and thousands of GIs turned against the war and actively engaged in both individual and collective acts of resistance to the war on many, many different levels. And I think that the movie itself is only 90 minutes, and it captures the stories of maybe 15 or 16 of us that were involved in everything from individual acts of resistance to the war to collective acts of resistance. But it only touches the very surface of what happened during the Vietnam era with American troops. But I think that, to be fair, is that, of course, the Vietnamese themselves carried the burden of fighting the war and defending their country. But the movement itself was very large, not just the GI movement I'm talking about. I'm talking about the anti-war movement. It was global in nature. And it's one of the myths that the movie really pierces. Is the myth that's been created by what I refer to as the right wing in this country, that the anti-war movement was simply a student-based movement of white privileged kids in the United States. And really nothing could be further from the truth. The student-based movement was very important, and I think us working class kids that were over there fighting the war, we got a lot of sustenance and energy off of what we understood was happening here. We felt, I know I felt personally, a lot of solidarity with people here that were in the streets and wanted to bring us home. I said, right on, get us the hell out of here, because we didn't belong there. But we also have to recognize that there were other important facets. There was the GI movement. There was the movement in Asia to end the war, particularly in Japan. GIs got a lot of active support from the Japanese people. Canada, the Canadians were amazingly supportive. So many people went to Canada during the Vietnam War. A lot of GIs sought sanctuary there and got sanctuary, as they did in Sweden and other places in Europe. So the movement itself was very broad, and I thought very multicultural, and that it crossed classes between the more privileged kids maybe that were in the U.S. going to school, and working class kids who were really conscripted to go fight this war. So,
yeah, one thing that I really love about the current situation, just having lived through those days, for instance, when Lieutenant Watada, just recently, the lieutenant at Fort Lewis who refused to deploy with his striker unit to Iraq, when I heard about that, I was just delighted, because I knew that although he may be the first officer to publicly oppose the war or to refuse to deploy, he certainly won't be the last. And what I remember from those days is, for instance, we had what they called the Concerned Officers Movement, which was military officers who were opposed to the Vietnam War. And we were activists within the military. And I knew that Lieutenant Watada would be the first, but that shortly after that, what will happen is we'll have a Concerned Officers Movement. You know, the fellow that just turned himself into Fort Lewis yesterday, who's a sergeant who was an interrogator in Iraq, and as he stood there at the Veterans for Peace Convention yesterday, it's going on in Seattle this week, National Convention of the Veterans for Peace, and it was this incredible scene where here was this interrogator who, after he came back from Iraq, went AWOL, and he's been underground for a year because he wouldn't go back and do that stuff anymore. And now he's going to go turn himself in and face the music. And as he stood there behind him, there were several rows of Iraq vets against the war. There's about 60 of them or so meeting over at the UW, this week. And then behind all the Iraq vets against the war were all these Vietnam vets against the war and resistors from both the Iraq War and the Vietnam War, all lined up in ranks behind the sergeant who was now going to go back and face the music. It was an incredible thing. And then out of the crowd stepped another interrogator, a guy that had been at Abu Ghraib, and who talked about his experiences and how he was supporting the fellow that was going back, and how, days after Rumsfeld had assured the world that there was no dogs being used against the prisoners at Abu Ghraib, that he himself had been ordered to use dogs against the prisoners and that sort of thing. It was an incredible moment. I mean, it couldn't have had a better send-off for a GI resistor than the one that happened just yesterday on the UW campus. And then some of the people, Mike Wong, who was also in the film that's showing right now at the Northwest Film Forum, Sir, No Sir, Mike Wong was among those who, a GI resistor from the Vietnam days, who went down to deliver the sergeant back to military custody. An incredible moment, I think, where you have the link between what happened during the Vietnam days and what's going on right now.
So are you... then, in fact, optimistic about the momentum in terms of resisting the current war in Iraq?
I sure am. I know that the nature of political process is that the corporate media controls the information flow to a large degree, and so they're not going to tell us what time it is, so to speak. And so things tend to go along. It's like union negotiations. Being an old union man, I imagine you can comment on that. But you go in and you bump chest with the boss, and you bump chest with the boss, and he says, I'd rather sell my own children into slavery rather than give you 25 cents on the check. And then about the time that you think you're going to walk out and grab the picket sign or something, you'll go, oh, okay, you can have it. And 1 second before that, you never would have guessed that he was going to cave. And that's the way political process is. having lived through the Vietnam days and been an activist, both a GI activist myself, and then once I got out of prison, I came back and organized GIs to be against the war at Fort Lewis for a couple of years. And so I was pretty heavily involved in the GI movement against the war for quite a long time. And having lived through that time, I kind of can see I feel sort of like a nurse, which I am. But, people can look at a patient and think that they're doing okay, but the people who are, the hospital-trained people can say, well, we're looking at his pulse or his this and that and the other thing, and we can tell that the guy's about to crump, and we go get the crash cart. And I, in a sense, having lived through the Vietnam days, I feel like I have some perspective on the developments of the movement and especially the GI movement in these days. And I really believe that even if people think that it's futile, it's just like when you're getting ready to go on strike. You go, oh, that boss is never going to give us the quarter that we're asking. And then all of a sudden he dishes it out, And who would have ever guessed? Well, we know that that's the way it works, and so you just got to keep it up. And I'm tremendously optimistic because what I'm seeing is tons of GIs that are starting to step forward and tell their stories. And each one that does it leads to the next one. One of the people that's featured in the film is a doctor, Howard Levy, who was very early in the GI movement during the Vietnam War. He publicly refused to train Green Berets, and he ended up going to Leavenworth Penitentiary for a couple of years. And a story that he doesn't even know, because I've never actually met the guy, and so I've never had a chance to tell him this. But as a young medic in the Army, I had his picture on my wall locker. Some of the other guys had Playboy bunnies or whatever on the inside door of their wall locker. I had, Captain Howard Levy's picture, clipped out of the newspaper of them hauling him away after his court-martial. At that point, I wasn't even thinking about resistance. I don't know. I look back on it now and I think, he obviously influenced me. And at the time, I didn't even realize that he was influencing me because I wasn't to the point yet where I was ready to do anything, any acts of resistance or anything. But somehow that guy influenced me. And Howard Levy influenced me. I, in turn, influenced many others. And so when Lieutenant Watada stands up, I know full well what's going to happen. There are soldiers out there who are being influenced by these guys that are standing up now, the early entrance into the idea of military opposition to the war. The Iraq vet that stood with us on the stage last night at the theater after the movie doing the Q&A, because we had one of the fellows from the Iraq Vets Against the War, and he said that if people are waiting for the soldiers to turn against the war in the Iraq war, hey, wake up. 80% of the soldiers are already against the war. He described acts of resistance that he witnessed, a fragging. Actually, he said there was two fraggings in his unit. He described people who refused to carry out their orders, refused to do a mission. There's all these things that are going on. It's really jumping out. Of course, the military doesn't want anybody to know about it, and especially they don't want the other soldiers to know about it, but the guys on the ground, they know what the situation in Iraq is. Anybody who's listening to this radio show may think that the Iraq war is bad, but don't you think that the folks who know it the most are the soldiers? And, the American soldiers, by and large, are decent people. They're motivated by, great ideals. So many of the soldiers that that I've been talking to, the Iraq soldiers, they tell me, person after person, well, gosh, I enlisted right after 9/11, and I went in because I thought that we should, rally around the cause and be patriotic. And they're motivated, but they're honorable people. They're motivated by high ideals. They're idealists, and in some ways they're the best because they actually step forward to contribute and to make a sacrifice if necessary. And that kind of person, given that they all of a sudden find themselves fighting for a lie, just like the soldiers in Vietnam did, during the Vietnam days, they told us that if we didn't stop them over there, that we'd have to stop them over here. And the American soldiers got over to Vietnam and found out the Vietnamese didn't have a navy. And that was probably the first clue. And we were fighting the Vietnam War for a lie. Well, we're fighting the Iraq War for a lie, too, and the soldiers know it. And they also know that we're mistreating the Iraqis. It's not, we're not over there for the Iraqis. We're not over there for the Iraqis, and everybody knows it.
I wanted to add there that I think that going back to the question about GIs in Iraq and Afghanistan and other places in the world right now, but particularly in Iraq. One of the subjects of the movie, I think, that comes out very clearly in the film is that wars of occupation. You know, when during the Vietnam era, you know, we were sent over, we had high ideals too. You know, we were 19, 20, 21 years old. We were fighting a war for democracy, just like people are being told right now. But, you know, what we're involved in is a war of occupation. The U.S. and their allies are obviously trying to reshape the Middle East in their own interests. And I think that objectively, when you look and see what's going on right now, is that you see that we're fighting with a group of guys, a group of people that GIs, very limited resources, that we have this so-called volunteer military right now, which I refer to as one that's been composed of an economic draft. Most of the people that we see, most of the GIs that we see, come from either the inner city or they come from rural areas that are serving in Iraq right now. They're the ones that are attracted to the military right now. Then the other folks that we see, of course, are the reserves. And we talked a little bit at the theater last night about the fact that there's really an unfair burden going on right now with the limited number of people involved in this war and the people who are being sent over time and time again. And I think that you know, we've seen people sent over for 2 and 3 tours, and that inevitably, with a war of occupation, okay, and the use of these limited resources, is that this is gonna break. And as this young man, this Iraqi veteran last night, who was in the Marines that was with us, said, he said, you know, that 70% or 80% of the GIs there right now, is that according to the polls that the military themselves are conducting, want to come home now. And so I think that it's really inevitable. I think that going back to the movie, I wanted to just talk about the film a little bit. I wanted to mention David Zeiger, the director, and he really touches on a lot of things that the movie was about, because David was a student activist, anti-war activist at the University of California, Santa Cruz. And he left school in the 60s and went down to Killeen, Texas, and joined the GI movement as a civilian organizer at a coffee house there called the Oleo Strut. And David became obviously intimately familiar with the GI movement through the role that he played. And so I think he, as he said, he's waited to tell this story for many years for an appropriate time to tell it, and I think that the war in Iraq provided that particular opportunity. Is a very timely piece. And even though the movie does not talk about Iraq, it talks about Vietnam. Everywhere we have been with this movie, the first questions of the audience is about Iraq. And is something like this GI movement going on in Iraq? And we say, yes, it is. It took 40 years before our story has been told, and it may, well, hopefully it's not going to take that long for the story about what's going on in Iraq to be told and understood by the American people. I wanted to mention also that in the movie, Jane Fonda plays an incredibly important role. And when we talk about breaking down myths, is that I think that there's another myth that has really been perpetrated. I know my own children were stunned because they said, gee, I thought all Vietnam vets hated Jane Fonda. And but, you know, Jane Fonda and others involved in the anti-war movement were incredibly powerful figures for a lot of veterans, and they were powerful figures for a lot of us GIs. And they gave us support. We wanted the war to end, and they were out there supporting us and the Vietnamese people, and we knew that. And really, that this is talked about in the film, and so I think that it's an interesting point in history for people to understand that, and to see the documentary film footage. Jane Fonda and Donald Sutherland and Holly Near and others put on this show that was an alternative to the Bob Hope show that they came overseas with. And there's documentary film footage in the movie of the FTA tour. Back then, the Army used to package itself as fun travel and adventure. Of course, we had another name for FTA. But the FTA show with Jane Fonda was attended by, according to their account, it was over 60,000 GIs in Asia came out to see that film. There's real powerful film footage of GIs at the FTA show in Asia, and the statements and support for the end of the war that GIs were expressing during the FTA shows. Anyway, I just think that it's a really important thing for people to understand, because Jane Fonda has been the subject of attack by the right wing for years and years and years, and they've helped to create this message that she's vilified by Vietnam veterans, and that's just simply not true. So I wanted to say that that's part of the story of this movie, too, and breaking down those kinds of myths that have been created over the years.
Yeah, that's true. I saw the FTA show, with 3,000 GIs, all screaming and chanting, "We love Ho Chi Minh," as Country Joe McDonald sang the song, and all these GIs were standing with their fist up in the air singing, "We love Ho Chi Minh," the leader of the enemy forces. The thing about it, what I want is for people to take heart. I want people to take heart for this reason. The Vietnam generation, the soldiers came home, they were opposed to the war, and many of them dedicated the rest of their life to activist causes and service to their community. There's one image of the deranged vet, or the Rambo kind of, myth. But the reality, if you stop and think about it, is how many Vietnam generation veterans do you know who have dedicated the rest of their whole life to service to their community and activist causes? And there is now another generation of veteran coming home. And the process of turning against the war, of standing up to their own government, of trying to stop a bad war, transforms them not only to being against the war, but also it turns them, just like it did to us, into people who will spend the rest of their life trying to right wrongs. And so the movement is going to have this, the Calvary is coming. And it's coming to the USA.
And I think that's a really important point, Randy, and because the movie really presents a positive image of those of us that were involved against the war in Vietnam, and of us Vietnam vets, and it breaks down that image that we all came back and we became derelicts of some kind, when in fact most of us came back and we got active in our communities, in our unions. We became active in local politics, and we've given the administrations, ranging from Nixon to the present, we've given them hell. Okay, and we're going to continue to do so.
All right. Unfortunately, we're out of time. The movie opened last night.
That's
at
right.
Cerno Sir at the Northwest Film Forum.
Exactly, on 12th between Pike and Pine.
And it's playing for at least a week?
It's playing for a week, two shows a night, 7 and 9 o'clock.
As well as it will eventually be out on DVD, is my understanding.
Yeah, it's actually, it is available now, actually, on DVD. And they've sent a lot of DVDs into Iraq to be gotten into the hands of the troops, so the movie's having an incredible effect over the last several days at the convention. I can't tell you how many Iraq veterans have come up to me and said, "I watch this movie 3 or 4 times a week."
The movie is actually available on the website www.cernosir.com, and you can purchase a copy of both the movie and the soundtrack. And the soundtrack is very cool.
It's best on the big screen, though, I gotta say.
I think it'll be coming out for general distribution, they said, in October. Of this year, but you can purchase it right now. It's kind of a special package on the website, www.cernosir.com.
All right. Well, I want to thank you both for coming in this morning. We've just been talking with Randy Rowland and Tom Bernard, both Vietnam veterans and featured in the new documentary, Sir, No Sir, which you can see this week at the Northwest Film Forum, and also check out the website, sirnosir.com.